on 1116 SEN, the world of football.
Back from a brilliant post-season break in Italy with his son. I think part of the family's still there. And straight into FFA Cup action is Fox Football's, well, we think he's the most important man. They might not agree, but they're, I think they're coming to their senses. How are you, Zathers?
I'm well, finally. Good to be back.
And we thank SPT Football, 182 Whitehorse Road in Blackburn. It is, for lovers of the world game, a beacon for merchandise material that is the latest and the best.
I actually went there on the weekend. Alessandro is growing out of his boots at a rapid rate, so we got a new pair. Sensational setup down there, finals. And the new Melbourne City top is out. It's in store, and it looks magnificent. So that will be part of our quiz tonight. You can get your hands on a new Melbourne City top. They're in the blue this year.
So they've got their way. They now look truly like a member of
the City Football Group.
The City Group, yeah. And they look like Man City.
Yeah, it looks fantastic. I like it. And we are giving away one of those new Melbourne City jerseys tonight. And I'm told the Melbourne Victory one isn't far away. Could even be next week. So stay tuned for news on that one as well for Victory fans.
And the Sydney FC sort of lobbied against Melbourne City wearing the sky blue, the traditional colour of Manchester City and the City Group, because they claimed that that was their colours. We know, of course, in the world of football, where there's promotion and relegation, there are jersey clashes.
I thought that was clashes. Ridiculous. You cannot own the rights to a colour. So for the FFA to back Sydney last year, I thought was a ridiculous decision. But
I mean, Sydney would be allowed to wear it in their home games against,
yeah, of course,
Melbourne City.
Yeah,
Melbourne City, and then Sydney FC would wear their away strip against Melbourne City.
Common sense has prevailed this year, and we'll have Melbourne City in sky blue.
Well, just think of Liverpool and Arsenal.
Yeah.
Imagine if one of them said, no, we wear red, or Manchester United. I mean, where does it end?
Yeah, that's right. So great to see. We'll give one of those away at our SPT quiz later. There's so much happening in world football. You touched on the FFA Cup. Tomorrow night it's all happening. Melbourne Victory fans, the Victory are in action in the FFA Cup tomorrow night as well against Brisbane Roar. But the feature game on Fox Sports tomorrow night, and I love this, that we're showing the local clubs in action, and we get to see plenty of the A-League clubs during the season. So the feature game tomorrow night is Hume City versus Bentley Greens, live from ABD Stadium in Broadmeadows. It should be a ripper, and I reckon Bentley might just get through here. Hume have struggled a little bit in the league this year.
Well, they've had their issues. They've they've moved their coach on.
Four times. They're on to their fourth coach this season, finally. They resorted to Nick Hegarty, who's
the player coach
yeah, now. And that's a phenomenon that we're not used to seeing so much these days.
It's, the FFA Cup has thrown up some great results, and we'll talk about it a little bit later. But speaking of great results, Sporting Australia became immersed in this Tournament of Nations in women's football as Australia... really, they scaled new heights. I think at the 29th attempt, maybe, they beat the powerful United States. Then, up against Japan, another powerhouse in the competition, a brilliant first half, and Miranda Kerr just set tongues wagging with her brilliant hat-trick, 4-2 to the good. By the time they met Brazil, the tournament was theirs, but to put an emphatic underline on where they stand in world football, they beat them with the Roger Federer scoreline of 6-1 in the first set. Their coach and a man who's been at the helm of the team and basically engineered this new powerhouse in world sport, Alan Stugdich, joins us tonight. Good evening, Alan.
Good evening. How are you going, boys?
We're well. And first of all, congratulations on, as I would say to any person involved with an Australian team that leaves these shores and comes back really with the undeniable title of world champs as we sit here now. And also congratulations on how you were able to capture the imagination of the Australian sporting public. All of a sudden, people are asking when the next game is. They're up early to watch the Brazil game and become invested in this new national sporting team that we love, the Matildas. Well done, mate.
Thank you. It's a great honour, obviously, to be part of such a special group and representing your country. But at the end of the day, we got to keep it in a little bit of perspective. It was a great effort by the team and great to capture the nation's attention like we did. But it's not the World Cup and it's not the Asian Cup for us. And at the end of the day, it was a friendly tournament, a very important one and a big one for us and a lot of good results. But at the end of the day, it is a preparation and a building block for the big three tournaments that were ahead for us, the Asian Cup, the World Cup and the Olympics in 2020.
Like the sports nut I am, I was there for game one, the game against the United States, not in person, but watching it live on TV and getting a sense that the team actually grew in self-belief and through that game. It started off, as I guess, with the prehistory that we had against the Americans, with the Australians very much invested in the game and being part of the game, but the Americans sort of feeling that, all right, we're knocking the door down, we will get the Aussies, and there was a turning point, maybe at the half an hour mark in the game, where Australia started getting a foothold in the game and the Americans realised that they were in for the battle of their life. And by the end of the game, I think it's fair to say that Australia controlled the match and left the pitch in a far different state of mind to the one that they entered the pitch. Is that how you felt?
A little bit, yeah. I guess I agree with most of that. I think the tough part for us was going into the game, we hadn't been together for 4 months. And the players had all played the weekend before. Some had played 5 days prior to that game for their club, so we really had a very minimal preparation. But the way the players came in with the maturity, I think I've spoken about it before, but the maturity and professionalism with which they came into camp this time was astonishing. It's the best I've ever seen from our group, and they really took that into the first game. But it's not just a switch you can turn on and off, you know, at an instant. It really takes time to grow into the game, and especially playing against the world number one and a team you've never beaten before. So I think we were a bit rusty in that first 10 or 15 minutes and feeling our way through the game. But I agree, from probably the 20th minute till probably about the 80th minute, I think we were the better team and controlled most parts of the game without really creating a lot of chances. But I certainly think we controlled the game. We had good possession. We had good moments in their penalty box, and I think we thoroughly deserve the win, to be honest.
Alan Zappa here, thanks for joining us. When you turn back the clock 12 months, it's a very similar scenario, because the first game against Canada, we're talking about the Olympic Games, of course, and there were huge expectations, and I know you set expectations on the team to do something special and win a medal, but it didn't start the way that you would have wanted. The team grew in that game against the USA, but not so much in that game against Canada. When you look back and compare the 12 months, what do you think's changed most? Is it that self-belief, the belief that grew during that tournament, the Olympic tournament, when you really pushed Brazil all the way and we thought that, you know, you'd come so close and we're on the cusp of something pretty special?
Yeah, look, I think the belief in the group's been growing for 2 or 3 years now. And for me, the turning point was really when we played America in the World Cup. That was also game one of the World Cup, and I thought we were exceptional that day. And that first half was still probably the best football we've played in the last couple of years. So I think that game, even though despite us losing that day, really gave the team that sense of belief that we can compete against some of the best players in the world and enter the park on any given day against anyone and beat them. The best part about this tournament was that we could not only do it for one half or for 60 minutes, we could do it game in, game out. And even though we didn't dominate every minute of every match, I still think we were the dominant team throughout all three matches and produced enough chances in all three matches to score all the goals that we did, which is really the most pleasing part, to be able to back it up game in, game out. And we've articulated that we want to win the World Cup in the future. And to do that, as we all know, you have to string together 6 or 7 matches in a row, not just one or one half. So that's what I'm really pleased about coming home after the couple of weeks we spent together.
One of the most pleasing things out of this tournament for Australian fans was the performance of Sam Kerr. And we know that she was injured and she's had a horrid run of injuries over the last, especially last 12 months. Talk to us about, you know, her influence on the team, and she's just 23 years of age, which is the most astounding thing, because she really is now considered one of the best in the world.
Yeah, she's had a lot of trials and tribulations with injuries and other things in her life, so I'm just so happy for her that she's bounced back the way she has, and touching back on the Olympics, she'd been out for almost 8 or 9 months going into the Olympics. So we had a lot of question marks on some players going into the Olympics, and that game against Canada was really her first game back. So I think she was great in that game too, by the way, but that just led to some of the inconsistency I think we had in that game. And looking back, it's really an aberration, that game, because we played so well in the qualifiers beforehand. We played well against Germany after that and Zimbabwe. So it's not the right day for an aberration, but certainly it was. But Sam's on fire at the moment, truly deserved. We couldn't be happier for her. She's such a great person around our team, becoming a real leader off the field. And she's really the person in the team who's almost like the glue. She's the one who's always having a bit of a laugh and a bit of a joke and just such a bubbly character. So I'm so happy for her on the field and off the field. She's certainly an important part of our team.
And finally, for those who don't know, a lot of AFL listeners are on this program, yes. The sister of former AFL footballer Daniel Kerr.
Yeah, we can probably say that the other way around now.
That's right.
They're a freaky family. Obviously great athletes, great parents have supported their kids throughout their sporting careers. So, look, Sam, I just can't speak highly enough of her and the way she's progressed over the last 12 months and hopefully for a long time to come. And you touched on her being 23, but she's not the only 23-year-old in the team. There's probably 9, 10, 11 of our key players are all around that 22, 23, 24 age bracket. So as long as we can keep them happy and healthy over the next 4 or 5 years, there's no reason why they can't be the staple of this team and us becoming even stronger over the next decade.
There's one who's not 23. She's the all-time record goal scorer for the Matildas, and she added to her wonderful resume of goal scoring in the tournament, Lisa Devanna. It's, I guess you've been with her, she's been with the team the entire time you've been at the helm, and a great example setter, ferociously competitive, and in a small package, you couldn't get more heart.
Look, I think without question, you know, like singling people out, but by far the most passionate person in wearing the national team jersey you could ever come across. Just absolutely lives and breathes for the jersey and playing football for our country. So it's just reward for a long career, and we're really happy for her also to get the record. And I've been a bit of a monkey on her back over the last 6 or 7 months, and a constant sort of reminder she gets all the time from the media about the record and all those kinds of things. So hopefully now she can relax a little bit more and enter that next stage of her career. And she's 32, but I still think she's got a lot of years left in her. She's just so electric, so quick, so powerful. And we even saw the other day against Brazil, they just couldn't contain her when she broke away. So hopefully plenty more years of her to come playing for the Matildas.
And one of the things that we've been starved of here in Australia is seeing the Matildas on our own turf. Now, we still need them here in Melbourne, but it's good to see that we've finally made one step forward, and that's a couple of games coming up next month against Brazil in New South Wales. So, Stad, your job is to get them down here to Melbourne.
Yeah, look, we played in Melbourne last year, and I remember I caught up with you there last year's Aussies. So, look, it's just great that some of the local councils in Sydney have put some money towards hosting the matches, and hopefully we get more and more matches as the years progress. And certainly if we want to bid for the World Cup in a good way and in a positive way, we need to be hosting more matches. But I can tell you that ticket sales are going really well. Almost a sellout the first game in Penrith already. So if you haven't got a ticket, or if you're thinking about coming up, I'd hurry up and get a ticket, because that'll be a great boost for our code as well, to have a sellout match for a women's football match in a standalone fashion. So we're really proud of our team for being able to capture the hearts of the nation like that, and hopefully it's just the first steps of women's football growing to where we think it should be.
We're speaking with Alan Stajic, the coach of the mighty Matildas, and a couple of big picture questions in a moment, but just back to players, and again, to pick out specific players from what was a great team effort is a little unfair, but there is a player who, when I watch the Matildas, I am continually impressed by the bar being reset. And it's Emily van Egmond, and she's a powerful, serious footballer with a good football pedigree. It's and no Aussie rules in that family, the daughter of Gary. And she to me, is sort of the heart of the working machine that is the Matildas on the pitch.
Yeah, unfortunately, we have to deal with her dad as well in the coaching staff. So that's a bit of a burden for all of us. But, look, first of all, he's been tremendous within our team. To have someone of his calibre on our staff and helping out with training session and his insight into the game has been invaluable. And, And obviously, you know that Emily's grown up in that football household, and she is just a real footballer, lives and breathes the game and almost goes to bed with a football. She's one of those type of characters. But she grew into the role. She hasn't really played number six for us a lot over the years, and that was at least Kellen Knight's position. So for us within the team, they have two players who can fill that role with such quality. It just shows you how much depth and flexibility we're building within the team. And that's certainly been the objective of 2017 for us, to build flexibility within the team and to build the depth of the team as well, moving into the Asian Cup next year.
So now on to the bigger picture of women's football in this country and where the W League sits. Probably Emily's a good case study because she's plied her trade around the world, playing here in Australia. She's played in the United States, currently based in Germany with Wolfsburg. What, first of all, when you pull your players together from around the world, are you happy with them? What for you is the best competition that they can come out of? Is it the American professional system or out of Europe?
Yeah, that's a tough question. At the end of the day, I just want them to be in the best environment they can be in, and that's best coach and best team around them, and obviously the best competition to play against each week. And that changes almost year to year in women's football. I've heard that Juventus might be putting in a team and Barcelona might be investing more money. In fact, at the moment, I'd say Germany's probably the strongest league, but America's probably the most consistent league with the most depth. So there's a lot of good leagues around the world, and PSG and Lyon are world-class teams in France, but possibly their league hasn't got that greater depth. So look, there's good leagues around the world and good clubs around the world, and the best environment we can find for our players is really the objective. I know that Ellie Carpenter just spent 6 months in Norway, even though she wasn't allowed to sign a contract, but you can see how much more mature she's come back as well. So the more competition they get, the happier I am.
So now for the sort of elephant in the room, really. In the last 12 to 18 months, we have seen AFL football embrace a women's competition, and they did so in faith because they guaranteed a wage structure, not devastating, but certainly above and beyond what women's football could return them financially. They then opened the gates for everybody to come in and watch it for free, but they made money available, serious money available, and were able to secure girls and women from other sports to come over and try Aussie rules.
Brianna Davey from Melbourne Victory, Melbourne City, was one of them, played in the W League finally, was picked up by Carlton as one of their marquee players.
Correct. Cricket has just gone through a torturous, but in the end, for the women, successful period of negotiation that sees the elite women cricketers, and we know Elise Perry has dual alliances there, international cricketer and international footballer, but their money is now guaranteed. And we wait to see whether or not women who play in the W League, and certainly the girls that represent the Matildas, are likewise financially reimbursed and looked after, because it's basically your move now, the FFA and other interested parties in Australian women's football to meet the growing demand for women's sport at the highest level and paying for it.
Yeah, look, we could talk about this question for a long time. I don't think you can solve this question in 30 seconds or a minute. But obviously, as the coach of a team, you want your players to be in the best possible position they can be, so they can be as professional as we want them to be to carry out the task of being the best athlete they can be. So from purely a selfish point of view and a coaching point of view, I want my players to be well remunerated so they can perform the best they can on the pitch. But, you know, being football like we are, we're not in the position that AFL are. They've got that $2 or $3 billion TV deal, and FFA's TV deal isn't quite the same, and many more mouths to feed within the FFA family rather than what AFL have. So a lot of variables there, but obviously we want to get as much as we can for all our players, men and women, and have them feeling the best they can be about their football, and try and encourage more kids to stay in our game, boys and girls. So look, obviously a very, very complex question, and a lot of variables that could be discussed on either side. So, you know, to give a shorter answer than that, I think would really be doing it an injustice.
Just philosophically, would you be comfortable with the footballers that make the Matilda squad to get the the biggest piece of the pie. At least, I'd like to think, and I think most fans and sporting lovers who have seen where the Matildas have progressed to would like to think that those girls earn a serious living and as you say, remunerated in a fashion that befits their standing in world football. Doesn't stretch through the W League, but those girls deserve it.
Yeah, look, I think there's a lot of things in the pipeline. First of all, the Matildas signed a CBA a year ago that guarantees them a 12-month contract. So we've got our top 20 players on a 12-month contract. That's a significant jump on what they used to be on. I'm sure you could research what those numbers are, but they're significantly higher than what the AFL girls were getting. So our top 20 players are at least being able to live off the game now. I wouldn't say they'll get wealthy off the game, but certainly they can sustain a living off the game now, which is at least a good starting point for us. And there is talk of a minimum wage coming into the W League either this year or next year. So that's something that has to be sorted out between FFA and PFA. So that's probably all I can say about that part of it. But certainly I agree with you. The more that we can support our players, the better off we're going to be in the long run, for sure.
And their coaches.
Yeah, of course.
Well, he knew about Juventus starting a team. Maybe the grand old lady has been on the phone to Alan Stadic. Now, if you end up over there, mate, I know someone who could speak both languages. If you need an interpreter or a media officer,
young you know who to Alessandro, call. Your son.
Who's that?
Good work, Alan. It's great to have you on, and we wish you all the best for the next few weeks, and look forward to seeing your team in action again against Brazil in September.
No, I appreciate your support. Thanks a lot, guys.
Brilliant there. Alan Stadic, coach of the world-conquering Matildas. And when do the next rankings come out for women's football?
They'll go up a few when they do, Finey. Yeah, not sure when.
The other players in women's football, I mean, just Sweden have always been a hard, cracking side, tough to beat. Interestingly, some of the football powerhouses like Italy and Spain are not...
Yeah, not traditionally strong, no. And they haven't invested in the game. But at the same time, the European Championships were being played. I think Holland won the European Championships for women just last week.
How did the French go? Because I see that they've sort of improved a bit.
Yeah, they have. They were good at the World Cup, and Germany have always been pretty strong as well.
That's right. So it's starting to mirror men's football, bar one key element, and that is that Australia are a serious player at any major championship, including the World Cup,
chance
a possibility.
To win it.
That's
yeah,
right.
For sure.
That's very exciting. And anybody that saw Sam Kerr and the goal-scoring power of the team will be happy to enjoy 90 minutes of women's football whenever it involves the Matildas. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, it's funny because I was discussing this maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago and still with the marquee position left open, we had a chat with Kevin Muscat, and I put to him the name of one Mark Milligan. As a Melbourne Victory supporter and an Australian football supporter, I believe he has probably over the last 5 years been our most underrated commodity, and I would say open for discussion, but I think our best footballer. I think Mark Milligan is, when he puts on the shirt for Australia, the most reliable and best footballer we've had in the last 5 years. So to have him back in town for Melbourne Victory warms the cockles of this Victory fans' hearts. Oh, can't use hearts and victory in the same sentence. But we're going to speak to Millsy when we come back. Welcome back. You know, the A-League season looms large. Of course, the FFA Cup stands as the pre-season. It's more than tune-up. It's serious business. Ask Central Coast and Perth what they think of the FFA Cup. But
they're going to have to play a lot of local teams now for the next few months.
I bet you they wish they were still in it.
Yeah, and the big question for Melbourne Victory fans, Melbourne Victory recruited, of course, Mark Milligan back to the club last week, Finey, but we're just waiting to see whether the international clearance has come through for Mark Milligan, signed from the UAE. They're waiting on this clearance. We can ask the great man now whether that paperwork's come through. Good evening, Mark.
Good evening, boys. How are you?
Very well. Welcome back home.
Thank you very much.
Has your clearance come through?
We think it's close, but not just as yet.
Trimmer's standing by the fax machine. Is he waiting for it to come through tonight?
Yeah, he's got me. He's got me next to the phone. So yeah, we're just waiting. Obviously, it's not too big a deal. It's normally to get the clearance, but obviously with time differences and things like that, and people being away with pre-season, sometimes it can take a little bit longer than we would like.
You know what, Mark? It's like a bank transfer. When the bank is taking money out of your account, it just goes instantly. But when you put money into your account, it's available in
5 business days.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, that's right. I'm sure if I was going the other way, there would be much quicker about things.
Let's just quickly touch on tomorrow night, because it's the first serious hit out for the team against Brisbane Roar, so no easy task, and a couple of new players that we're looking forward to seeing in victory colours. Reece Williams, I understand, will play, as will the returning Costa Barbarousis, as will James Tarisi, who for a long time we thought wasn't going to be in the victory colours this season.
Yeah, no, obviously Reece is a very exciting addition to the team, as is Costa and retaining Jimmy, and sort of all being together over the last week and a half. I think we're pretty close to a full squad now. So, and tomorrow night is a big test. It's always a big game playing against Brisbane Roar. They're a very good side, and I think even early on in the season, they'll be well prepared. And obviously, being such a big game, being the cup, they'll be wanting to win as well.
And have to just wait a little while to reignite that new rivalry, or ignite that new rivalry with Fahid Ben Kalfella, because he's going to be missing tomorrow night. He's got an injury, so that's always interesting when a player plays against his former club.
Yeah, definitely. And I think before I left, I think the games were very good. I think we pretty much wrapped up the minor premiership up here, so. I know there's been a bit of time between that. How competitive Brisbane Roar always are, and the same with us. We want to go deep into the stuff tomorrow.
Beyond the FFA Cup, there is the start of the A-League season, and it ended last year with people acclaiming Sydney FC as probably the most powerful premiers that we had ever seen. Their home and away record supported that, so their player retention has been very good. It means that Melbourne Victory needed to be proactive, as all the teams had to be, and proactive they were. There must be a really strong feeling around the club, and I guess as much as the official line, Mark, would be there's 10 teams in the competition, we respect all of them, there still is a bit of a target on Sydney FC's back, I would have thought.
Yeah, I think that's always the case. They were very strong, and I think obviously it spoke for itself with the way they finished the year. And I think everyone's always trying to build each year, and a lot of teams have done that. So I think it's good that we've been able to retain and bring back a few Australian players who are still very much at the peak of their powers. And we're very excited about the upcoming season. And you tend to look back on last year, and at the moment, I guess Sydney FC are the benchmark, but we'll be looking to change that, and we've got a few months now to keep working, and with a couple competitive games, it's very important that we make the most of those.
So, Mark, just we know last year Victory were terrific and really pushed Sydney FC all the way in the grand final. Obviously, there's been a bit of change in the lineup and the wingers, especially with Kalfella and Rojas, two wingers who started a lot of the games for Melbourne Victory, no longer there. Who can we expect to see in those positions? Obviously, Costa Barbarousis picks himself on one of the wings. The other one up for grabs, Jai Ingham and Mitch Austin, I'd imagine, would be right in there. What can Victory fans expect?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think we have two exciting young players in Mitch and Jai, and the last sort of 5 days in the lead up to this game, training's been very good, and I think everybody sort of knows that's what's right for grabs. So I'm not too sure as yet what's going to happen tomorrow evening with Costa as well, but there's definitely competition now for those spots, and I think all three of them are looking good. Whoever steps up tomorrow night, I'm sure we'll do a job. And as I say, there's some very exciting young players coming through.
A combination with you and Carl Valeri, I'd argue, is the strongest in the A-League in the midfield. It speaks volumes for what the club's been able to do to have you two in there. Must be nice to play alongside Carl. He's not there tomorrow night. And you touched on Reece Williams. We know that earlier in his career he played in the midfield and has played as a centre-back, but it's fair to say that Kevin will use him in a defensive role this year?
Yeah, I think at the moment that's the plan. I think obviously Reece is very comfortable in the midfield and at the back, but you know, the main focus has been on making sure that you know, we get him ready and fit, because he is such a key player in what we want to achieve this year. You know, I think we're very fortunate to get him to the club, and I think Victory fans will be very lucky to watch him week in, week out.
Tell us about the last few weeks. It's been a roller coaster for you, no doubt. Obviously, you were playing last season in the UAE, and there was some talk that you might end up in the English Premier League. And we know that as a 20-year-old, you spent some time over there, and that's obviously every player that puts on a pair of football boots, their dream would be playing the English Premier League or in Italy or in Spain. It is a convoluted process. Can you explain for our listeners just how difficult that was for you in the last few weeks, not knowing whether you'd end up in the English Premier League or back at home or in Asia?
Yeah, well, it's a little bit, I guess, it's a similar situation to what happened when I was younger. Obviously, when I was younger, though, it fell more on me, as you know, you need to be above 75% of national team games. And obviously, when I was younger, I was used, you know, off the bench or not so much, more in squads and things like that. But there's a new rule. It's only 12 months old, and you know, even a couple of the clubs that we were dealing with were unaware of it. And that's it. The national team has to be in the top 50 on average over the last 2 years. And you know, obviously, leading into the Asian Cup, I think we're all low 100s. Even after winning the Asian Cup, we sort of came into the 2 year average. We're sitting in the mid 60s. So our average was at about 53rd. Now, there's an argument to be had over there with young players that the clubs developing you and you know, intend on filling you on and bringing money into the English game. And obviously, with my age and where I'm at the moment, it's a little bit of a tough argument to have. So it was a bit tough, simply because so much time and energy went into it. You know, we're obviously working under the assumption that you know, my caps are at about 98% of games over the last 2 years, that there wasn't going to be an issue, and you know, the clubs over there were under the same impression. So you know, a lot sort of got pushed aside as we, you know, thought we were very close to getting a deal done there. But you know, obviously, I'm very fortunate that you know, Muskie and Melbourne Victory were, I guess, in a way able to throw me a lifeline, and you know, definitely not a bad lifeline to have thrown.
That works both ways. Mark Milligan, our special guest tonight on the World of Football. Mark, your time in the UAE, you played for Banias, and we sort of are able to track our players when they go to Europe and even into China and other parts of Asia. We get weekly reports, but unfortunately we don't hear a lot from the competition that you played in. Can you give us a bit of a snapshot of the standard and of the sort of football you felt you played while you were with that club in the UAE?
Yeah, I think, look, it's definitely not a bad standard at all. There's a lot of quality players over there. I think you see that with the UAE national team and with the standard of foreigners that they're able to recruit. You know, they're not just sort of bringing in foreigners in their late 30s trying to wrap up their career now. They're trying to bring them in at a better age, I guess. You're sort of looking at that 25 to early 30 bracket, and It is very competitive, obviously, over there. I think, as in most leagues, you still sort of have your top four or five teams, and then everybody else sort of you know, around there, and that's definitely what it's like over there. When I first went, we had a foreign coach, which was, you know, very good. We had a Spanish coach, and he was excellent for me. You know, I continued to learn under him. You know, I think toward the end, we sold a lot of players, a few international boys, and they tend to make decisions rather quickly sometimes. And, yeah, that can hurt, and which is what sort of happened towards the end of my time there. They made a few rash decisions, and I think it hurt the team. But, yeah, it's definitely not bad. You definitely need to go over there in the right frame of mind, knowing that, you know, the times you're going to have to work hard and it's going to be on your own. But obviously I still had a lot of drive in me with the national team commitments and things like that to continue to work hard and continue to improve.
And just quickly, what was like life off the pitch? Because we hear stories from the Gulf, and I'm fascinated to know what you made of life away from football.
It was beautiful. We were very fortunate. We're in a very good area. You know, we have a good mix of locals and foreigners around, and you know, we were able to really you know, create a home over there. You know, in that sense, everything was was very good. We're very fortunate to live in a very good area near the water with very good schools. And, you know, although my family is happy to be back in Melbourne, you know, I think my eldest daughter's struggling a little bit with the weather.
I can imagine, having just passed through there on the way home last week. It's a bit different at this time of the year. Mark, we thank you very much for joining us. All of Melbourne Victory supporters were overwhelmed and happy to see you back at the club, and I'm sure it's going to make a big difference to the Victory setup. We hope to see you on the park tomorrow night in Brisbane.
Me too, and I look forward to seeing you guys soon.
Continued success, whether you're wearing the dark blue of Victory or the famous Australian colours of green and gold. Of course, two big matches coming up for Millsy and the team against Japan and Thailand.
Yeah, so Victory fans, tomorrow night on the FFA coverage, you'll be able to see all the action, all the highlights and the goals as they happen. And just another point of interest in this game tomorrow night, Finey, Massimo Maccheroni, the new signing for Brisbane Roar, looks like he'll play as well. Playing in the Serie A last year, he's a very good player. He'll score plenty of goals this year.
We're going to stick, though, with the Hume City Bentley Greens game.
Yeah, we are.
And with good reason as well, because at the end of that game, there will be four NPL teams through to the next round from Victoria.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And well done to the teams participating in Victoria.
So we've got South Melbourne through. We've got Heidelberg through.
I think it's three. So it'll be three after
South Melbourne, Heidelberg, and guaranteed Hume or Bentley.
Correct.
Melbourne City is the other... team locally. And
so we could have five with Victory, if Victory gets through.
Five out of 16 would be good. Yeah. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, Melbourne City's new strip, so reminiscent of their big brothers in England, Manchester City's, is up for grabs in the SPT football quiz. 9429 1116. Get on the line now, because the third correct answer wins the lot. Welcome back. Well, they're queuing up for the Melbourne City Guernsey. Don't forget SPT Football, 182 Whitehorse Road in Blackburn. They've got the new city top, and the Victory one's just around the corner.
And the English Premier League kicks off this weekend. Finally, we haven't even touched on that. That's how busy we've been.
Yep.
And down at SPT, they've got all the badges available. So, like, genuine English Premier League badges on the jerseys, all the numbers with the proper Premier League. We know that our fans are sticklers for detail.
Have they got all the teams?
The genuine product. Now, I didn't see the West Ham strip there.
Yeah, but I'm worried it's a big six.
I could talk to the boys and make sure you get one.
Yeah, I'm on my Chicharito top. let's go to the callers. Adrian's in Lower Temple. Say g'day, Aid.
G'day, Bonnie. How are you, mate?
Good. I'm going to hand you over to the quiz master, Mr. Michael Zappone.
All right. Adrian, new Melbourne City signing Eugene Galekovic. I saw him during the week looking resplendent in his Melbourne City suit. Has played for which other A-League clubs? Plural.
Adelaide.
That's one.
I'll overstep in the dark. Newcastle.
No, let's go to our next one, because we have got a full board. Brad in Lara. Eugene Galekovic played for Adelaide United and who else?
Melbourne Victory.
Correct. Who was Melbourne Hearts' leading goal scorer in their inaugural A-League season?
The big, tall Dutchman. I can't...
No, thank you, Brad. Let's go to Con in Hillside. This is a tricky one, Finey.
I didn't get it.
Who was Melbourne Hearts' leading goal scorer in their inaugural A-League season?
G'day, Con.
G'day, guys. Was it Rutger Wurm?
No.
He was an ordinary player, wasn't he?
Well, let's go to Daniel in Willett.
Daniel.
Hello, Dan. No, right. we'll try Richard in St. Albans. Hello, Richard.
Ah, yuck, I'm fine. How are you, Ian Zappa?
How are you, my friend?
Yeah, good, thanks. Go West Ham.
Now, yeah, well, I better do better than their pre-season form.
Yeah, well, what was the score against City the other night?
3-0 to the bad. I was more...
Don't read anything into pre-season.
No, and Billich has never been a pre-season man, but I was more concerned with their 3-0 draw against Alton 93 from the 4th Division of German football.
That's like playing against St. Albans down here.
less than St. Albans down here. All right. Do you know who the leading scorer was in season number one?
Any clues?
You've heard of him. You've definitely heard of him.
He's still involved in the game here in Australia.
No, I've drawn a blank, fellas. I won't hold the line.
All right. Thank you, Richard. Let's go to Noble Park and Rob. Hello, Rob.
How are you, boys?
Good. He's got a very famous goal for the Socceroos.
Josh Kennedy?
No.
No.
Good try. Joe's in Hillside. Hello, Joe.
Hey, g'day, Zappers. How are we?
Good, mate. Melbourne Heart's leading goal scorer.
I'll give you a clue. He broke the Australian 40-metre record for running without a top, waving a shirt above your head after he scored that goal for the Socceroos.
Oh, jeez, I'll have a stab with Aloisi then, eh?
Yeah, yeah, might be right. All right, now the big one.
All right, Joe, for the prize, the Melbourne City jersey. Who was Melbourne Heart / City player to score an A-League hat-trick? The first ever Melbourne City Heart player to score a hat-trick.
Oh, Jesus. Well, I'll go Alex Terror.
No. Good call, though.
Yeah.
He was a good player. Brendan in Glen Huntley. Hello, Brendan.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good.
I'm just trying to think.
He's now playing overseas.
He's playing in Hungary. He was, when he was good, he was very, very good. And when he was not so good, you wondered whether he cared.
So he's playing in Hungary. Is he Aboriginal?
You're going pretty well, if you want to have a guess.
Is it David Williams?
It is. Well done. It's a good get. David Williams currently playing in the Hungarian First Division.
Yep. Zappers, I want to thank you for coming in.
Always a pleasure.